U.S. Israeli genocidal war in Gaza continues for the 169th day as the number of Palestinians killed surpasses 32,100. Russia says it has arrested suspected gunmen as a death toll from the shooting rampage at the concert hall near Moscow hits 143. And Russian president declares a day of mourning and vows to punish whomever ordered the shooting at the concert hall. Hello and welcome to World News, coming to you from our international studios right here in Tehran. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, nearly 6 months now into the Israeli genocidal war on Gaza, the regime's relentless bombardment and shelling continue to claim innocent lives in the besieged Palestinian territory. Several areas, including Jabalia in the north and Rafah in the south, have come under fresh area strikes. At least 7 people have been killed in Israeli shelling as aid was being distributed in Gaza City. The Gaza Health Ministry says 114 more Palestinians lost their lives in Israeli strikes in a matter of 24 hours. The death toll from the U.S.-backed genocide in Gaza since October has now surpassed 32,100, most of them women and children. 7,000 others are unaccounted for and fear to be dead under the rubble of their homes. Over 74,400 Gazans have also been injured. Well, almost 6 months of Israeli bombardment continues to claim the lives of innocent Gazans. Families of victims of the latest Israeli attack talk about their situation.
My message is find a solution to what's happening to us. We are tired. Or they should hit us with a bomb and relieve us of this world. This is a shame. What's happening here does not happen to humans. This is not normal. This is a disaster on the whole world. No one is doing anything or finding a solution to this situation. How much longer do we have to endure this? There is unbelievable pressure on us. People cannot be silent about us to this extent. Shame on them. The things that are happening to us are shameful.
We were asleep at 1 o'clock and the house started shaking. 8 people were killed. This is a shame. They were all children, 5 children, and the father and mother. They were all children. They hadn't done anything. What happened to them is unjust. This is a shame.
Can you see what is happening to us? Every day we have 200, 150, 170, 700, 300, 400 martyrs daily. Until when are you going to just look at us? Until when is the Arab world going to just look at us? What does the world want from us? Come and rescue us from the genocide that Netanyahu and his group have inflicted on us.
The house was struck when people were sleeping. They were children and innocent people, not affiliated with any factions. They are innocent civilians and children. We pulled them in pieces. It is considered a safe zone. There is no threat here. We are supposed to be safe here. People were targeted at 1 a.m. when they were asleep.
People were sitting down for suhoor when suddenly there was a huge explosion. My house is not far away, about 50 meters from here, so I came and saw that a fire had broken out in the house of these people. They were displaced people who had come from the north and taken refuge in the south, a mother and 6 children.
Meanwhile, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres, on a visit to the doorstep of the war-ravaged Gaza, has appealed for a ceasefire and the delivery of aid into the territory.
Nothing justifies the collective punishment of the Palestinian people. Now more than ever, it is time for an immediate humanitarian ceasefire. It is time to silence the guns. Palestinians in Gaza, children, women, men, remain stuck in a non-stop nightmare.
Guterres was speaking in a visit to the Rafah crossing on the Egypt-Palestine border. He described the long line of blockaded relief trucks on one side of the gates and starving Palestinians on the other, a moral outrage. The UN chief said the choice is between increasing aid or starvation. Guterres said the continuation of the war will make the humanitarian situation worse. He also warned Israel against launching a ground operation in Rafah. The Gaza Strip is struggling with severe shortages in food, water, medication, and fuel. Israel has blocked the entry of almost all essentials into the besieged territory, including foodstuff, medicine, and water, since the regime began its genocide war on October the 7th. The death toll from a terror attack at a concert hall outside of the Russian capital rises to 143. Scores of people were also injured in the shooting rampage. The attackers, dressed in camouflage outfits, entered the Crocus City Hall on Friday and opened fire there. The Daesh terror group claimed responsibility, but authorities in Moscow have dismissed the assertion, emphasizing that the investigation is still underway to ascertain the culprits. The Federal Security Service has reported the detention of 11 suspects. Russian President Vladimir Putin says the four people directly involved in the attack were trying to flee to Ukraine when they were detained.
All perpetrators, organizers, and masterminds behind this crime will get just an inevitable punishment. Whoever they are, whoever guides them, I repeat, we will identify and punish everyone who stands behind the terrorists, who prepared this atrocity, this attack on Russia, on our people. Four perpetrators of the terrorist act who shot and killed people have been detained. They were traveling towards Ukraine.
Putin described the attack as a barbaric terrorist act and announced a day of national mourning. He said some people on the Ukrainian side had prepared to let the suspects cross the border from Russia. Ukraine has denied any involvement in the attack. The massacre has been slammed by countries across the globe. The UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres condemned the attack in the strongest possible terms, while the Security Council underlined the need to hold accountable those responsible for the deadly incident. Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi also censored the attack and extended his condolences to the families of the victims. Tens of thousands of Yemenis have once again filled the streets of the capital Sana'a and other cities to reaffirm their steadfast support for the Palestinian cause and resistance. Abdul Latif al-Washali reports from Sana'a.
Under the banner "Our operations will continue, stop your aggression," tens of thousands of Yemenis have taken to the streets of the capital Sana'a and other cities across the country to renew their full support for the Palestinians. They have also called on Yemen's armed forces to persist with their naval operations in the Red Sea and Gulf of Aden in solidarity with Palestine.
We realize that the cause is our cause, and the enemy is our enemy, and we are fighting a battle that is essentially our battle. Our blood is one, we and the Palestinians, and Islam is the religion of all of us, and we cannot abandon our brothers in religion. We are fighting from a Quranic culture, and what the people of Gaza are exposed to is the same as what the Yemenis were exposed to.
Protesters chanted slogans criticizing the United Nations Security Council's recent statement against Yemen's naval operations. They argue that the world body has demonstrated its alignment with White House policies, disregarding its role in maintaining international security.
Today, Yemenis are rallying in dozens of squares in their millions, as if it were a human flood, an extension of the Al-Aqsa flood operation. The Yemenis today, despite the years of war and despite the difficult circumstances they are going through, are still committed to their first and central issue, which is the Palestinian cause.
The Yemeni people came out today to send a message to the people of Palestine and Gaza that they are not alone. The Yemenis stand with Palestine with all their military capabilities, whether naval forces or drones. And our message to the enemies is that we will not stop fighting and confronting them.
Earlier, Abdul Malik al-Houthi, the leader of the Ansarullah movement, warned the Western powers of stronger and more effective attacks in the future. He highlighted that the Yemeni army has managed to outmaneuver Western technology in surveillance, jamming, and interception, marking a significant advancement in the development of Yemen's military industries.
Despite the sunny weather, thousands of Yemenis have gathered here while fasting to make their point. They say if not for the border restrictions, they would pass through neighboring states to reach Palestine and join the struggle against the Israeli invaders until the liberation of the occupied territories. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
The 31st edition of the International Exhibition of the Quran has kicked off in Tehran. The event is held annually during the month of Ramadan, showcasing a variety of products dedicated to promotion of the Holy Book. Fatima Masume brings us the details.
The International Quran Exhibition is the most significant exhibition of its kind in the Muslim world. It will run from March 20th to April 2nd at Tehran's Musalla. Held during the holy month of Ramadan, the fair features paintings depicting verses and teachings of the Holy Quran, as well as calligraphy and illumination artworks. This year's event has a particular focus on the situation in the Gaza Strip and Palestine.
This year's fair has several interesting sections. We have had a special focus and investment on some strategic sections, such as the subject of children and youth. The aim is to teach Quranic concepts to them through various attractive tools and games and other artistic means. Another important issue that we particularly paid special attention to was the issue of Palestine and Gaza resistance movement, which is the top issue of the Islamic world.
The fair features 45 Quranic institutions and 24 governmental bodies. The Quranic meeting of the exhibition will focus on the issue of Palestine and situation of the Gaza Strip in the presence of scholars from 25 countries, 5 ministers from Islamic states, as well as representatives from Iraq, Lebanon, Turkey, Poland, Russia, Saudi Arabia, Tunisia, Libya, Algeria, and Qatar are invited to take part in the event.
These days we are witnessing Israeli genocide in Gaza, and it's heartbreaking for everyone to see the innocent people of Palestine under such conditions. The issue of the unity of people is very evident in the international section of the exhibition. One of the important messages of the international section of the fair is to speak loud and clear about the defenseless and innocent people of the Gaza Strip and the resistance movement.
The Tehran International Quran Exhibition is annually organized by Iran's Ministry of Culture and Islamic Guidance. As always, the exhibition will host several Quranic competitions. Researchers and university professors have also been invited to talk about the Holy Quran and its teachings.
The International Holy Quran Exhibition opened on March 20th with the aim of promoting the Holy Quran and its concepts. This year, the focus of the fair will be on the Gaza Strip and Palestinian resistance movements, as well as pertinent issues like the Al-Aqsa flood operation and Zionism. Fateh Masumi, Tehran.
The school year in Afghanistan has commenced, yet over 1 million girls have been barred by the Taliban from attending classes beyond the sixth grade. Afghanistan is the only country with such restrictions on female education. Reporting from Kabul, Rahmatullah Baghban brings us more.
In Kabul, Afghanistan, the school bell rings and students make their way to classes. But conspicuously absent is half of the student population. The Taliban's top officials attended a ceremony on the reopening of schools and delivered speeches that omitted any mention of girls' education or their future. Even female journalists were banned from reporting the story.
It's a great honor that a new education year is kicking off in Afghanistan. From today, all students are returning to their classes after a winter break. Last year, 1.2 million new students enrolled in schools, and this year the number will increase. We as Muslims are obliged to learn Islamic teachings and lessons first, and modern education is also necessary in the second place.
Despite the Taliban's valuation of education, their ban on female students has now impacted some 1.4 million Afghan girls. According to UNICEF, 5 million were out of school before the Taliban takeover due to a lack of facilities and other reasons. Afghan female students and advocates are now outraged and deeply concerned about their future.
All the girls out there were waiting for their schools to be reopened. They are all shedding tears of dismay and pain now. Afghan girls are intelligent and hardworking, where all the efforts and dreams demolished by the Taliban's ban. It's tough to be a girl in Afghanistan and see your dreams vanishing in front of your eyes.
The Taliban have repeatedly promised young female students would be readmitted when several issues were resolved. Nevertheless, the ongoing ban poses a significant barrier to their quest for recognition as Afghanistan's legitimate government. Afghan citizens remain optimistic about the prospects of education for their daughters. Yet there is a growing concern that opportunities are diminishing. They call upon both the Taliban leadership and the international community to collaborate in ensuring equitable educational access for all in Afghanistan. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
And with that, it brings us to the end of this World News Bulletin. Thank you so much for staying with us.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The head of UNICEF, Catherine Russell, has talked about a staggering rate of child deaths in Gaza, not seen in any conflict in the world. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The French national broadcaster France 24, France 24, has covered this story and tells us more. In an interview with France 24, Catherine Russell, the executive director of the United Nations Children's Fund, UNICEF, sounded the alarm about the plight of children in Gaza after more than 5 months of Israel's brutal war. The head of UNICEF said an estimate of 13,450 children killed in the Palestinian territories since 7th of October last year is probably on the low side. She noted that many more children are trapped in the rubble or are wounded and often separated from their families. Catherine Russell also discussed the incredibly dire situation regarding hunger in Gaza. According to a United Nations-backed food security assessment, half of Gaza's population is experiencing catastrophic hunger, with famine projected to hit northern Gaza any time between now and May without urgent intervention. This is very much a man-made problem, Russell told France 24. All of us in the international community have to do better here and make sure that we can get aid to these children in Gaza. She added, "We cannot have children starving to death in Gaza. That is not acceptable." Turkey's Anadolu news agency has also covered the same story. The staggering rate of child deaths in Gaza has not been seen in any other conflict in the world, according to UNICEF Executive Director Catherine Russell, speaking on Sunday, 17th of March. "I think these numbers that we're seeing out of Gaza are just staggering. We haven't seen that rate of death among children in almost any other conflict in the world. It's really shocking," Catherine Russell said during a television program. More than 13,000 children have been killed, thousands of others injured, trapped under rubble, or have lost their parents, Russell said, adding, "It's a horrifying situation." Catherine Russell added that the profound impact on children in Gaza stemming from the stress, grief, loss, and fear they experience is bound to have lasting effects on them and potentially on their own offspring as well. "We know now that children are dying from malnutrition in Gaza," she said. "I've seen a lot of children, unfortunately, in my job around the world who suffer from malnutrition. It's a shocking thing to see. Essentially, the body starts to consume itself because it has nothing else, and it's a painful, painful death for children." She added that even if therapeutic feeding can be provided to those in need, they often endure lifelong consequences, such as stunted growth, which also affects their cognitive abilities. "It's a lifelong challenge for these children if they survive," she said. Israel has waged a deadly military offensive on Gaza since 7th of October last year. More than 31,600 Palestinians, many of them women and children, have been killed in the enclave, and nearly 73,700 others have been injured amid mass destruction and shortage of basic necessities. The Israeli war on Gaza has pushed 85% of Gaza's population into internal displacement amid a crippling blockade of food, clean water, and medicine. Iran's Press TV has also covered the same story. UNICEF Regional Director for West Asia and North Africa has warned that more children in Gaza will die due to impending famine as the Israeli regime continues to impede aid operations in Gaza. Adel Khodr urged Israel to open all border crossings to allow aid into Gaza Strip, citing the Integrated Food Security Phase classification, recent report warning of an imminent famine in Gaza. The Integrated Food Security Phase Classification, or IPC, findings on Gaza confirm what we have been warning about of impending famine for months now. The world's inaction is shocking as more children succumb to a slow death. All border crossings must open now to allow unfettered access to humanitarian aid for the population of Gaza, Adel Khodr wrote on social media post. The IPC, a group that includes the World Food Programme and the World Health Organization, warned that famine is imminent in northern Gaza Strip, with people suffering catastrophic levels of hunger. It said 1.1 million people, half of Gaza's population, are experiencing catastrophic food insecurity. According to the IPC, the Integrated Food Security Phase classification, virtually all households are skipping meals every day and adults are reducing their meals so that children can eat. In 2/3 of households in northern Gaza, the report said people went entire days and nights without eating at least 10 times in the last 30 days. In southern Gaza Strip, this applies to 1/3 of the households. In a statement published on Monday, the United States Agency for International Development USAID Administrator Samantha Power said the IPC report is a reality for the population of Gaza. Samantha Power added that there have been only two famine declarations in the 21st century, which marks a truly tragic milestone. The catastrophic levels of hunger and malnutrition described in the IPC report should be unimaginable in the current era. But for hundreds of thousands of Palestinians in Gaza, this is reality, Samantha Power said. Martin Griffiths, the United Nations top relief coordinator, said on X that the international community should hang its head in shame for failing to stop the famine in Gaza. "We know that once a famine is declared, it is way too late." The head of UNRWA, The United Nations Relief and Works Agency, Philip Lazzarini, also expressed his disappointment as he was refused entry into Gaza, where he was scheduled to enhance the humanitarian response in the territory. "This man-made starvation under our watch is a stain on our collective humanity," Philip Lazzarini wrote on a post on X. Meanwhile, the president of Iran, Said Ebrahim Raisi, has called for a serious practical step to stop the Israeli regime's ongoing attacks on war-torn Gaza. The Iranian president, Ebrahim Raisi, was speaking during his New Year message to Asian countries celebrating Nowruz, the Iranian New Year. The Iranian president said Nowruz is a message of peace and peaceful coexistence and also a symbol of reconciliation. The Iranian president said this year, "We, the countries of the Nowruz Civilization Zone, are celebrating this auspicious occasion while the oppressed and powerful people of Gaza are facing the brutal attacks of the usurper Zionist regime and are also under a complete siege, being deprived of their access to basic healthcare and basic facilities and are in danger of starvation and famine." The Iranian president, Ebrahim Raisi, said, "It is our humanitarian duty to use our capabilities to take serious practical steps to stop the attacks of the Zionist regime and send humanitarian aid to the oppressed people of Gaza." The Iranian president sent a message addressed to the leaders and peoples of the countries of the Nowruz Civilization Zone. In a separate New Year message addressed to the Iranian people, President Raisi hailed Gaza's resolute resistance against the brutal Israeli onslaught. He said the global powers used all their might to try to destroy the 2 million people of Gaza. Meanwhile, the Islamic resistance in Iraq has said its fighters have attacked Ben Gurion Airport twice in the past week using drones. In a statement on Wednesday, 20th of March, the Iraqi resistance confirmed its attack on the Israeli regime, which is currently waging a genocidal war on the people of Gaza. The fighters of the Islamic resistance in Iraq at dawn on Tuesday have targeted Ben Gurion Airport in the Zionist regime using drones. The resistance also affirmed its commitment to strike the enemy's stronghold as part of its second phase of operations in support of the Palestinians of Gaza. In response to the Israeli massacre of Palestinian civilians, the second phase of the resistance's operations has started, which include the enforcement of a blockade on Israeli maritime navigation in the Mediterranean Sea and putting Israeli ports out of service. The resistance also attacked the same airport on 12th of March using drones. The Islamic resistance in Iraq says it will continue its attacks on Israeli targets until Israel stops its genocidal war in Gaza.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
يا أيها الذين آمنوا, O you who believe, استعينوا بالصبر والصلاة.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is the way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Now it's time to listen to a short speech by Sayyid Muhammad Rizvi.
We started the commentary on one of the famous du'as that we recite every night in the month of Ramadan, known as Dua Iftitah. And last night, basically, we talked about the source of it. This is a dua which comes from the Imam of our time, Al-Hujjat ibn al-Hasan, salawatullah alayhi. And And we, the word iftitah comes from the very first sentence, where you say that I am beginning, aftatihu thana bihamdik, I am beginning the praise of you by hamd. And we talked about the importance of the term hamd, why we use it very frequently in our conversations. And then we went on to the praise where we talk to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that even to praise you, we need your help. Because, you know, we don't have the ability to even know you, understand you. And so even to help, you know, to pray to you, to do dua or praise you, we need your help. And that's why you have Surah Al-Fatiha. These are the words of Allah. But it has come in a form that we recite it in our daily prayers. And there, one of the important praises that we have, that you are Arhamur Rahimeen. You are the most forgiving in the situations of forgiveness, as well as you are Ashaddul Mu'aqibeen, the most severe in disciplining when it comes to the situation of discipline. It's kind of opposites, but this is where we have to realize, as I said, you know, the attributes and sifat of Allah are of two types. Not subutiya and salviya that you hear in madrasa. That's right. This is a different dimension of it. There is sifat jamaliya and sifat jalaliya. Sifat jamal are the beautiful attributes of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So arhamur rahimeen would be sifat jamal. Ashaddul mu'aqibeen would be the sifat al jalal of His majesty. And this is a balance which we have to create in our heart, according to the sixth imam. A mu'min is somebody who balances this fear of Allah's punishment alongside the hope in the mercy of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And this is known as khawf and raja. And this is how we will be able to keep ourselves on track and on sirat al-mustaqim. And so the statements from the imams goes on that, you know, Avinta, you are the one who allowed me to pray to you, to call you. And in you, if you look at it, we gave you an example at the end of my talk last night, that there is no restriction where you call Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, where, when, in which situation. Absolutely nothing. Even if you're in the washroom, you can still remember Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. You know, we might think this is very unusual, but this is the reality. And, you know, and then we ended the discussion that, oh Allah, I'm approaching you relying on the help that you have given to me in the past. So there is a track record that you have in my mind. You helped me, and so I'm approaching you now. So this was basically the first part of the introduction that I talked about last night. And so I'll continue with that. Then the Imam is now teaching us that we have not even started asking anything yet. This is just, you know, the preamble. It is kind of, you know, creating that basis in order to ask Him. And this is where we are now saying to Allah that I'm praying to you, relying on the past mercy that you had on me. I look at my past, I see how generous and kind you have been, and keeping that in mind, I am asking you, Allahumma inni as'aluka qalilan min kathir. Oh Allah, I ask you for a little from the much that you have. مَا حَاجَةٍ بِي إِلَيْهِ عَظِيمًا وَغِنَاكَ عَنْهُ قَدِيمٌ. While what I'm asking, you know, I really need it, although it is just little, and you are free from it, you don't need it. وَهُوَ عِنْدِي كَثِيرٌ. But in my views, what I'm asking for is plentiful. وَهُوَ عَلَيْكَ سَحْرٌ سَهْلٌ يَسِيرٌ. For you, it is a very simple and easy task to do. اللهم إن عفوك عن ضمبي وتجاوزك عن خطيئتي وصفحك عن ظلمي وسترك عن قبيح عملي وحلمك عن كثير جرمي عندما كان من خطئي وعمد أطعمني في أن أسألك ما لا أستوجبه منك. Allah, I look at you. I look at your forgiving of my sins. I look at you overlooking my mistakes. I look at you pardoning me for my wrongdoings. I look at you covering up my evil deeds. Only you know. You don't expose me to the people. I look at your tolerance towards my many faults that I have done, intentionally or unintentionally. All this kindness that I see in you regarding me, أَطْعَمَنِي فِي أَنْ أَسْأَلُكَ مَا لَأَسْتَوْجِبُهُ مِنْكَ. All this tempted me to ask you, although I don't deserve it. Because you have been generous and kind to me, الَّذِي رَضَقْتَنِي مِنْ رَحْمَتِكَ, what you have given to me in the past, out of your mercy, and you showed me your power, and you made me recognize you as somebody who responds to the du'as. فَسِلْتُ عَدُوكَ آمِنًا وَأَسْأَلُكَ مُسْتَعْنِسًا. And so Allah, I now continue praying to you with that hope, by keeping all these things in mind, and I ask you with the familiarity that I have with you, لَا خَائِفًا وَلَا وَجِلًا. I'm not asking you anymore out of fear or, being very afraid there, because I have this confidence in you, in what I intend to ask from you. فَإِنْ عَبْتَ عَنِّي عَتَبْتُ بِجَهْلِي عَلَيْكَ وَلَعَلَّ الَّذِي عَبْتَ عَنِّي هُوَ خَيْرٌ لِي لِعِلْمِكَ بِآقِبَةِ الْعُمُورِ. However, we have not even asked anything yet. But we are saying to Allah, okay, maybe you might not respond to my dua today. But I accept it. There might be a delay, O Allah. And maybe out of my ignorance, I will blame you. Why not? O Allah, you are giving to everyone. What about me? Well, this is my ignorance, O Allah, if I think about you in that way. Because you have the best of knowledge, you know what is the best of outcome for me. And inshallah, we'll talk about this whole issue of, delay in the response of du'as in the words of Amir al-Mu'mineen tomorrow night. So let me end with this one passage here at the end. فَلَمْ أَرَ مَوْلًا كَرِيمًا أَصْبَرُ عَلَى عَبْدٍ لَئِيمٍ مِنْكَ عَلَيَّ يَا رَبِّي. So I confess, O Allah, that I have never seen a more generous master who is patient with his evil slave, then you are with me. Why do I confess that you are the Mawla Kareem, a generous master? Because innaka tad'uni fa'awwalli anka. You call me, but I turn away from you. You know, Allah's door is never closed. It is we who turn our back towards him. If we turn around and look back, you will see his door is still open. And as I recited this statement from the hadith last night, you take one span towards him, he will take an arm length towards you. This is the meaning of tawbah. تَتَحَبَّبُ عِلَيَّ فَأَتَبَغَّضُ إِلَيْكَ. You show affection and love towards me, but perhaps because you didn't accept my dua, I feel, angry with you. تَتَوَدُّ إِلَيَّ فَلَا أَقْبَلُ مِنْكَ. You show your love for me, but I don't respond in the kind manner towards you. As if I have power over you. But Allah, in spite of all this attitude that I have towards you, لَمْ يَمْنَعَكَ ذَلِكَ مِنْ رَحْمَةِ لِي. All this did not prevent you from having mercy on me and being kind to me and to be gracious towards me, bijudika wa karamik, out of your generosity and kindness. Farham abdakal jahil. So Allah, continue to have your mercy on this ignorant slave of yours. Wajud alayhi bi fadli ihsanik. And be kind to him out of your generosity. Innaka jawadun kareem. You indeed are generous and kind. May Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala accept our dua, and inshallah we will continue the discussion tomorrow night.
Dear listeners of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, you can follow this program entitled Minbar every day in the month of Ramadan. If you have any suggestion, you can send us your email at englishradio@irib.ir.
Love is everywhere, so much peace fills up the air. Ramadan, month of the Quran, I feel it inside me, strengthening my iman. But how I wish you'd be here with me all year around. Ramadan, 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 ya Habib, Ramadan. ليتك دوما قريب, ليتك دوما قريب.
Congratulations to all at the arrival of a spring and revival of nature. Congratulations to all at the arrival of a spring and revival of nature. Congratulations to all at the arrival of a spring and revival of nature.
In the limelight.
The United States, Israel's biggest ally, has provided the Israeli regime with a raft of arms and ammunition since the war in Gaza started last October. The United States has also vetoed a number of UN Security Council resolutions that have called on the Israeli regime to cease its aggression in Gaza. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The Wall Street Journal has covered this story and tells us more. The administration of US President Joe Biden is reportedly preparing to send tens of millions of dollars worth of bombs and weapons to the occupied Palestinian territories in continuation of Washington's untrammeled support for the occupying regime's months-long war in Gaza. Citing unnamed US officials, the Wall Street Journal reported on Friday, 16th of February, that the proposed arms delivery includes MK-82 bombs and KMU-572 Joint Direct Attack Munitions, or JDAMs, which add precision guidance to bombs, and FMU-139 bomb fuses. The report cited an assessment of the proposed arms transfer drafted by the U.S. Embassy in the occupied city of Al-Quds as claiming that the Israeli regime had requested rapid acquisition of these items for its continuing war in the Gaza Strip. Citing a U.S. official who said the details of the proposal could change before the White House notifies congressional committee leaders who would need to approve the transfer, the American Journal added, the proposed delivery is still being internally reviewed by the Biden administration. Since December of 2023, Washington has twice skipped congressional review of weapons sale to the Israeli regime, as the regime's brutal aggression against Palestinians of Gaza lingers on for more than 4 months, with well over 100,000 Palestinians dead and injured. According to the U.S. Journal, President Biden has provided roughly 21,000 precision-guided munitions to the Israeli regime since the start of the war last October. The report said the remaining weapons are enough to sustain 19 weeks of bombing Gaza, but that would shrink to days if Tel Aviv also launches a full assault on Lebanon, from which the regime has come under harsh retaliatory attack by the Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah. The arms transfer comes as President Biden claimed on Friday, 16th of February, to have been repeatedly pushed Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu for a temporary ceasefire in Gaza. In defiance of widespread international calls, the Israeli regime has insisted on an imminent launch of a ground invasion of Rafah in southern Gaza Strip. Rafah houses an estimated 1.4 million Palestinian refugees. Out of a total of 2.3 million population of the Gaza Strip, the United States, Israel's biggest ally, has provided the Israeli regime with a raft of arms and ammunition since the war started in Gaza last October. The U.S. has also vetoed a number of UN Security Council resolutions which called on the Israeli regime to cease its aggression in Gaza. The Intercept has also covered the same story and tells us more. U.S. Campaign for Palestinians' Rights in a report stated that every year the U.S. government writes Israel a blank check for at least $3.8 billion to fund Israel's violence against the Palestinian people. The U.S.-based pro-Palestine advocacy group, U.S. Campaign for Palestinian Rights, stated, "Rather than using those funds to provide for American communities in need, our government uses taxpayer dollars to enable the Israeli military to massacre Palestinians, destroy their homes, and steal their native land." Code Pink, a women-led grassroots organization working to end U.S. wars and militarism, also recently issued a global call on the United States to stop funding the ethnic cleansing of Palestine. The statement by Code Pink read, "The slaughter and daily assault on Palestinian human rights being carried out by Israel is an unacceptable use of U.S. taxpayer dollars. We demand an end to U.S. collaboration in the ethnic cleansing of the Palestinians." The statement added, "U.S. taxpayers pay Israel over $10 million a day, and Israel uses that money to inflict violence all over Palestine. We call you to halt this aid and demand that Israel stop its assault on Gaza, its evictions from eastern Al-Quds, and its attack on the Holy Al-Aqsa Mosque." John Schwartz, writing in The Intercept, said he had been wondering how much money he, as an American citizen, contributed to Israel's occupation of the Palestinian territories and attacks on the Gaza Strip. John Schwartz wrote, "So how much have I chipped in to create this hell on earth? The best answer I've come up with is $150, adding that it could be either less or more. John Schwartz added, "You can figure out your own contribution if you want. Add your income taxes to any federal bonds you bought this year and multiply that number by 0.004. According to a March report by the U.S. Congressional Research Service, Washington has sent Tel Aviv a total of $158 billion in bilateral assistance and missile funding since 1948. At the same time, the United States and several other Western countries have stopped their funding of the United Nations Agency for Palestinian Refugees, precipitating a humanitarian crisis in the besieged Gaza Strip. The British newspaper The Independent has also covered this story and tells us more. President Joe Biden sears his name in history by becoming the first sitting American president to be sued for complicity in genocide over the United States' abetment in the Israeli regime's ongoing genocidal war against Palestinians in Gaza. The first hearing in the case was held at the federal courthouse in Oakland, California recently. Human rights organizations and Palestinian U.S. citizens are plaintiffs in the lawsuit, which was lodged by the Center for Constitutional Rights, a New York-based legal advocacy organization, in mid-November. The Center for Constitutional Rights filed a lawsuit on behalf of Dr. Omar Al-Najjar, a physician at Al-Nasser Medical Complex in the city of Khan Yunis in southern Gaza Strip, as well as Palestinian human rights groups, Defense for Children International, Palestine, and Al-Haq. The lawsuit also names U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin and the U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken. The United States has been providing the Israeli regime with all-out military and political assistance. It has armed the Israeli regime with more than 10,000 tons of military hardware and blocked ratification of the United Nations Security Council resolutions that have called on the Israeli regime to cease its aggression in Gaza. The lawsuit states, if the legal responsibility to prevent an unfolding genocide is to mean anything, indeed, if the rule of law is to signify anything, courts of law must have a role and responsibility to enforce these foundational international law principles. The lives of so many people are at stake. You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,880 kHz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pastoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
The annual Ramadan Quranic meeting, April 30th, 2019. There are some individuals among good and outstanding Egyptian Qurra who do not frequently use assimilation and whose recitation is very good. Besides, they exert considerable influence. We can cite Abdul Fattah Sha'shai as an example. As you know, he does not use assimilation, but at the same time, he is one of the best and most influential reciters. I hope that Allah, the Exalted, will bestow His mercy and forgiveness on him and on all Qurra. Therefore, I request that Qurra do not bother with assimilation. The same is true of too much repetition. This is not necessary either. Because our time is over now and Adhan is about to be said, I will only raise this point. I request that the audience observe limits when they want to applaud a reciter and when they want to say Allah, Allah. This is also another act of imitating the Arabs. As soon as a reciter of the Holy Quran begins reciting, some people constantly say Allah as if it were one of the necessary requirements after recitation. But it is not necessary to do so at all.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Sometimes you are deeply moved by someone's very beautiful and influential recitation, and you applaud them involuntarily. According to the Arabs' tradition, Quranic applause is done by saying Allah, Allah. Of course, this is not particular to the Holy Quran. When someone sings an ordinary song, they say Allah, Allah. There is nothing wrong with this, but if we constantly say Allah, Allah as soon as a reciter begins reciting the Holy Quran, this is not necessary at all. I request that you yourselves advise in those meetings where you are considered as teachers and experts, participants to avoid saying Allah, Allah to excess. When a reciter recites the Holy Quran in a very beautiful and artistic way, it is all right to applaud him. However, one sees that some people say Allahu Akbar as soon as the reciter says, I seek Allah's protection from Satan, the rejected one, a Quranic phrase that is used when someone wants to begin reading the Holy Quran. I hope that God will associate all of you with the Holy Quran and that He will build your life in this world and in the hereafter by the blessedness of the Holy Quran. Greetings be upon you and Allah's mercy and blessings.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.